a reading lesson from Exodus. I'm going to be in Exodus in the 16th chapter. We're going to read a couple of verses there, and then we're going to try to go through some thoughts that the Lord has given us there. So Exodus in the 16th chapter, starting in the first verse, says, "And they took their journey from Elim, and all the congregation of the children of Israel came unto the wilderness of Sin, which is between Elim and Sinai, on the 15th day of the second month after their departing out of the land of Egypt. And the whole congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and Aaron in the wilderness. And the children of Israel said unto them, Would to God we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and when we did eat bread to the full. For ye have brought us forth into this wilderness to kill this whole assembly with hunger. Then said the Lord unto Moses, Behold, I will rain bread from heaven for you, and the people shall go out and gather a certain rate every day, that I may prove them whether they will walk in my law or no. And it shall come to pass that on the sixth day they shall prepare that which they bring in, and it shall be twice as much as they gather daily." We'll go ahead and read in the reading there, and I want us to go back to the third verse to really hone in on our thought this morning. "And the children of Israel said unto them, Would to God that we had died by the hand of the Lord in the land of Egypt, when we sat by the flesh pots, and when we did eat bread to the full." And that's what I want to think about this morning. The title of this lesson, my thought is the flesh pots of Egypt. The flesh pots of Egypt. So again, you all are familiar probably with where we're at. The children of Israel have been down in Egypt. They were in bondage. They were slaves there. Of course, they had gone down when Joseph was the ruler, second only unto Pharaoh in Egypt. And they had been placed over in the land of Goshen because they were herders. And they had a very good time of it then through the rest of that famine that was in the land that you can read about back in Genesis. But then it says that Pharaoh died. And Joseph died, and then a Pharaoh rose up that did not know Joseph. So years passed, generations passed, and pretty soon the children of Israel were put into bondage, and they were slaves in Egypt. And you all remember how that God called Moses to go tell Pharaoh to let my people go, and there were the plagues that God brought down upon Egypt to display His power, and that's why that He brought those 10 plagues. He was displaying before Pharaoh and before all of the Egyptians and before the Israelites that He was more powerful than any of the gods of Egypt. Each one of those plagues addressed a specific deity of the Egyptians, and God was showing that He, Jehovah, was more powerful. But they had witnessed, the children of Israel witnessed all that until finally the last plague and the death angel came. And Moses told them how that they were to eat the Passover and to put the blood on the doorposts. And they watched the next morning as a great cry went up through every house in Egypt as the firstborn had been slain from Pharaoh down to the lowest servant. But only the children of Israel who put the blood on their doorposts were spared by the death angel when they saw God's deliverance. And then God brought them up out of Egypt with a high hand, it says. And the people were giving them, they were giving them gold and jewels and silver and all these things and herds. I mean, they were just giving them stuff as they left, and they came out rich in possessions. And then they traveled for 3 days, and they got backed up against the Red Sea there. Do you remember that they couldn't go to the left and they couldn't go to the right? And Pharaoh's army was coming up behind them, and the Red Sea was in front of them. They cried out, and Moses cried out, and God said to him, "Stand still." and see the salvation of the Lord. And there, through the hand of Moses, God parted the Red Sea, and this great miracle of the water standing up on the sides, and they walked across on dry ground, and every one of them separated from Egypt. And then God let the waters go and drowned Pharaoh and his army, and all that had happened. And here we pick up the story really just a few days later. It says that this was on the 15th day of the second month. Well, why is that important? Well, it's important because the Passover night happened on the 14th day of the first month. And so all of this, the death angel had come and all of that had happened in Egypt on the 14th of the first month. And then they left and they went 3 days and the parting the Red Sea. And all we're 31 days since the death angel had come. And in that time, God had delivered them miraculously several times. He gave them water out of the rock just a few days before this. Yet here they are, beginning to murmur against the Lord. So we wanted to do all that background to get you to understand where we're at, where the children of Israel, and how soon after their salvation this murmuring began. Now, the other thing as we go through this, we're going to draw some spiritual parallels, but I want you to understand, a lot of things in the Old Testament, I like to try to learn and to teach out of the Old Testament, because there's a lot of types and shadows in the Old Testament. Types and shadows of Jesus Christ. Types and shadows of the Lord's church. And all those things that become crystal clear with the appearance of Jesus and the church. We can see that many of those things in the Old Testament were types and shadows of things to come. But this event here and what we're going to talk about today is not a type and a shadow. It's a case in point. Now, what do I mean by case in point? What I mean is it's an example. It's different than a type and a shadow. It's an example. Just like those Israelites were then, so are you and I today. Just like that. This is an example of how men, people, have always been and probably will always be until Jesus comes back. And not just people, but God's people. This is exactly the way God's people, the Israelites, you know, a lot of times we read about those Israelites back there, how they were murmuring. I mean, they did. They murmured a lot. They were a murmur people. They were always upset about something. They weren't happy with what God had done. And they were always, even after they got over to the promised land, right, they were always falling back. They were going to worship gods and the other people's gods, and they just never could get it right. Even after God did, He'd raise up a judge and He'd deliver them miraculously, and then a generation later they'd slide right back and God would have to punish them again. And we look back and say, man, they never did get it, did they? But boy, we're just like that. I want you to see, we're just like that. Let's not get down on them too much, because we're just like that. We're going to see as we go along, hopefully, this morning. So this is not a type, but a case in point about God's people and what we're like. And God's trying to teach us something here. So, they had been delivered from bondage. Delivered from the slavery, literal slavery that they were laboring under in Egypt. They were slaves to the Egyptians, working in the brickyard, hard life. But boy, when things got tough, they began to look back, and the flesh pots, they wanted to go back to those flesh pots, didn't they? You know what those flesh pots represent? They represent sin. Sin will entice us back when the going gets tough a little bit. I want you to understand where they were at. They had gotten delivered. You know, here they are down. They were in a bondage, and they were in dire straits, and they were lifting up their voices to the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. They had been promised. God had made a promise, and it had been passed down through the generations. He was going to deliver them. And they were crying out, and that's what God told Moses there at the bush. He said, the cry of my people has come up before me. And so they had cried out to God, and here he had delivered them, and he did all these miracles, and he brought them up out of bondage in a way they could never have imagined. Again, not just out of bondage, but their pockets full of gold and silver and jewels. I mean, they were weighted down with all the blessings that could be bestowed upon them. And here they go, and I bet they just thought, this is it. I mean, we're out of bondage. God's going to bring us over. We're going to be over in the land of milk and honey. And we're going to settle down and everything's just going to be great. And as soon as the going got a little bit tough, they got a little bit hungry. They got a little bit thirsty. And they said, oh, we just go back. We'll just go back. Go back to the bondage. They forgot about how terrible the bondage was, about how they were crying out to God to deliver them, about the lash of the taskmaster and the brutal labor of the brickyard. They forgot all about that. All they could think about, boy, the flesh pots were good, though. Yeah, all that stuff was pretty rough, and we were in bondage. We had to work hard. They were killing the firstborn of our children, and all these other things were going on. But, man, the flesh pots were good. I mean, we ate good. We weren't hungry. It tasted good. Does sin do that to God's people sometimes when the going gets tough? Do we look back? We forget about the bondage of sin. We forget about how bad things were. We forget about the weight of our conscience when we were crying out to God. We forget what it was like on that mourner's bench in that back room or out in that field or wherever it was that you might have found peace with God. We forget about all that, the bondage that you might have had to sin, the sins of this life, the sins of the flesh, how that it was weighing you down. We forget about all of that. We say, yeah, but man, it was pretty good, wasn't it? It was pretty good. I had friends. I had this. I had that. I'd just rather go back. The ways got pretty rough, God. I don't really like this. I thought you was going to deliver me right into the promised land. See, that's what they thought. They thought God was just going to miracle them right into the promised land. It wasn't going to be any tough road to hoe between deliverance and their final destination. But it's not like that, is it? This Christian life's not like that either. God delivers us out of sin and death and bondage. And it's good for a little while, but pretty soon things begin to get rough. Doesn't it? It does for all of us. This Christian life is not necessarily an easy one. Jesus didn't say that. He said it wasn't going to be that way, huh? He said, be prepared. And I'm paraphrasing heavily what he said, but he told them, if they persecuted me, if they hated me, what do you think they're going to do to you? And we know every one of those apostles, save probably John, died a martyr's death. And countless others in the first generation church and for years after had rough, difficult lives and died a horrible martyr's death. Jesus never promised it was going to be easy. They had to go through a time in the wilderness. But listen, we're going to have to go through our time in the wilderness as Christians, as God's people. But understand, those flesh pots, don't let the flesh pots back in Egypt entice us back. It will, and the devil will remind us. He'll remind us, oh, but it was good. Your belly was full. That's what he think about this. God had delivered them. They had seen the miraculous hand of God, parting of the Red Sea. And you might say, well, man, if I'd have seen that, I'd never go back. If I saw God and all those plagues and the death angel, and I mean, that was real miracles. And then he you know, parted that Red Sea and all that, man, I'd never go back. I'd never doubt God. You really think so? You really think you're that much closer than they were? See, the thing about miracles is it soon becomes commonplace to us, doesn't it? It soon is not the sun rising every morning and setting every night according to God's schedule. Is it not a miracle? It's not the rebirth of life every spring when the dead trees bloom again. Is that not a miracle? Is not the baby being born a miracle? We see it every day, but it's become commonplace and we don't even think about it anymore. Think about this. You know, my grandparents on my mom's side were older. My granddad was born in 1909. You know, when he was a kid, if you said that I could pull a thing out of my pocket and dial up and talk to somebody halfway around the world standing right here, that'd have been a miracle to him, wouldn't it? That'd have been a miracle to him. or turn on a television and see an actual picture, live rendering of something that's happened halfway around the world. He said, that's a miracle. Couldn't even happen. But now you and I, we see it every day. It's not even a miracle anymore. It's commonplace. See, that's the way the miracles of God come. You see them time and again, they just become commonplace. So it would happen to us just like it. Has not God delivered us? If you're saved this morning, has He not delivered you from bondage? Has He not rained down blessings upon you? Has He not provided for you? Hasn't He parted the Red Sea for you from time to time? Hasn't He chased away Pharaoh when he was on your heels from time to time? And yet we forget about it sometimes. And we get enticed back by the flesh pots of Egypt. Because a miracle doesn't last for very long. So just because they saw miracles of the type that you and I haven't seen, doesn't mean that it didn't just become commonplace. I mean, just probably a week before this, God brought water out of a rock. But how soon they forgot. How soon we forget what God can do and what He will do. Because we look back. We look back to the flesh pots. We look back to the way life was sometimes, and we get enticed by that. But at any rate, they were hungry. They said, we're going to starve out here. But what happens? It says, but then the Lord said unto Moses, behold, I will rain down bread from heaven for you. God provided, didn't He? Just in the moment of their murmuring, just in the moment of them saying, I don't know what we're going to do. We're going to starve. There's no food out here. There's 2 million of us or how many ever there was, and all of our animals, and we're in the desert. We're going down. We should have just stayed in Egypt. Should have just stayed in bondage. Should have just stayed slaves. At least our bellies were full. God says, no, I'll provide. I'll provide for you. Not only will I provide for you, I'll provide something for you like I've never provided for anybody else before. He rained down manna for them. Manna from heaven. Over in Psalms, it says that it's angels' food. You know that manna that God rained down for them? It was perfectly designed to sustain them through the trials that were ahead. God knew that they were going to have to wander in that wilderness. He knew that their little ones were going to have to grow and all those things. And that manna, as simple as it was designed by God to meet their needs. It was the one and only thing that could sustain them in their journey through that wilderness that God had laid before them. And He will provide for us manna from heaven. He has He not? Jesus Christ is manna from heaven, isn't He? Jesus said, I am the true manna. Over there in the Gospels, I think it's in John, when the Pharisees were complaining and saying, well, Moses fed our fathers in the wilderness. If you'd do something like that, we'd believe you. And Jesus said, you don't understand. I'm the bread of life. I'm the true manna. Moses fed you, but you had to eat it every day. Every day you had to go get more. But what I give you will sustain you forever. Jesus is our manna, provided to us. If you're saved here this morning, God has given you access. You have access to Jesus Christ, the Savior, each and every day. The Bible says that He liveth ever to make intercession for us. We have access to Him. Jesus, when He left this world, He said, I'll send unto you the Comforter, that where you are, He may be. And He'll come along. That word in the Greek, the Paraclete, I probably didn't say that right, Parakletos, means one who comes beside, Comforter, one who helps. Jesus said, I'll give that to you. He's perfectly formulated, so to speak, to sustain us through this life. Amen. God provides. He provides what's perfect to sustain. And He has provided us Jesus. He provided them manna just when they thought, just when they set their eyes back on those flesh pots. Just when we get to that point and we think, man, I ought to just go back. I'm going to start laying out of church. It's not any good. We start laying out of church. We start laying out of our prayer life. Maybe we let things in our life start slipping back like they were in bondage. We start going to old places and old haunts and old friends and old things. And the devil keeps reminding us, boy, those flesh pots tasted good, didn't they? And he makes us forget about the bondage that we were in when we were out there in the world. But the going gets rough and we start going back to those flesh pots. But I want to tell you, if you'll cry out to God, He'll provide manna from on high, Jesus Christ, to sustain us. But here's the thing about it. That manna is very unsatisfying to the flesh. Yeah, it was. God gave them, again, I want you to picture this. God gave them manna, and you all know, I don't have to go read it. Every morning when the dew came, it was there. It says it was about the size of the hoarfrost, you know, just real little, maybe half a dime size or something. And it was real delicate, and they just gathered it up. And everybody got about the same amount. It didn't matter whether you gathered more or you gathered less. When it all got, you got just what you needed. It talks about homers and ephats and whatever. I did some research just to break it down. What everybody got per day was about 3 quarts. About 3 quarts, enough to sustain for the day. And they didn't have to work for it. They had to go gather it, but they didn't have to. It just came down. It was right there. You just had to go gather it up. God just laid it out there for them. Angel food, perfectly formulated. You just have to cry out. If you're a child of God, you just have to bow your head in your prayer closet and reach out, and God's right there. Jesus Christ, the Savior, is right there, right there. But let's turn over to Numbers, 11th chapter of Numbers, in the 4th verse. It says, "And the mixed multitude that was among them fell a-lusting. And the children of Israel also wept again and said, 'Who shall give us flesh to eat? We remember the fish which we did eat in Egypt freely, the cucumbers and the melons and the leeks and the onions and the garlic. But now our soul is dried away. There is nothing at all besides this manna before our eyes.'" That manna, perfectly formulated by the hand of God to sustain them. But they said, "God, we want something else. We remember the fish and the leeks and the garlic and everything back in Egypt. Those flesh pots back in Egypt, man, they were good. And God, all that you have given us is this measly manna, this measly angel food, the very corn of heaven you have given, but it just doesn't hit the spot." See, because the thing about it, it didn't please the flesh. It didn't please the flesh. Now, the picture here is of food, but we're of course seeing spiritual things. But understand, that manna, the best that I can understand, it says there that the manna was as a coriander seed, and the color thereof, the color of bdellium. And the people went about and gathered it, ground it in mills, or beat it in mortar, baked it in pans, made cakes. And the taste of it was as taste of fresh oil. Another place it tasted a little bit like a drop of honey. Best I can tell, it was about kind of like maybe a saltine cracker with just a dab of honey on it. Just a dab of sweetness on it. Which is fine, but it really doesn't. Our palate, boy, we like those strong tastes, don't we? We like the, what is it that they said? They talked about the melons, which would have been sweet. The leeks and the garlics, those strong, spicy foods. So the manna was perfect for them, their bodies. It gave them all the nutrition, all the sustenance that they needed. But it just didn't hit the spot on the taste bud. The flesh didn't enjoy it the way the flesh wants to enjoy things. That's a way about God, isn't it? That's a way about Jesus. That's a way about the things that God would have for it. It doesn't please the flesh, does it? It doesn't please the flesh. That's why we've got this war between the spiritual man and the fleshly man, doesn't it? The spiritual, the things that feed the spiritual man, just like that manna, it fed them, it nourished them better than anything else could. Perfectly formulated by God, but it didn't please the flesh. And they let the flesh get the better of them. They said, "Boy, we just want to go back to the flesh pots in Egypt. We want to go back and eat the meat and the stuff we had there." Because it was pleasing to the palate. Never mind that what God has given us is perfect in every way. It's bland. It's bland. It just don't have much taste to it as far as this flesh goes. Do we ever get to thinking that way about Jesus? Do we ever get to thinking that way about this Christian life? That it's bland? That it doesn't satisfy the flesh? Well, that's the devil's playground, isn't it? That's the devil's playground when he gets to think, gets us to thinking that this Christian life isn't pleasurable. It isn't fun the way the flesh pots of Egypt are fun. It isn't fun the way that sin is fun. That's how he has enticed generations. That's what he entices young people with. But I see him enticing middle-aged people and older people with it as well. It's just not that fun. And it's because we're not recognizing how good that man is. We're not recognizing how good the blessings that God has given us are. But we still want that flesh. We still want that food that was back in Egypt, just like they did. But you know why that is? That's because the more we eat of it, the more our taste buds want it. You know, pretty soon, if all you ate was that manna, pretty soon you'd begin to forget. You'd begin to forget what that stuff back there even tasted like. It began to fade away in your mind if you just focused on eating that manna. The problem was they were eating the manna, but they weren't liking it every night. They'd go to sleep and they'd remember what it was like to eat that stuff in that flesh pot, and they'd roll it around in their mind, and they'd roll around that what it was like back there, and they'd just think on it, and they'd ponder on it, just like a good memory. You have never thought about sin that way, have you? You have never thought about sin. You have never thought about, well, you know, I don't live like that anymore, but you know, there were some good times, and you know, roll it around in your mind and get a little taste of it again. Boy, that'll stir up your desire for it, won't it? That's what they were doing. That's the only way they could keep remembering. If we put those things off into the past and we let them go and we don't let our mind go dwell on those pleasures of the flesh, if we don't let the devil take us there, if we put our focus on the manna that is before us, we'll begin to forget what that flesh in Egypt even tasted like. And that's where we need to get to. That's where God's trying to get us to. But one of the problems that they had that I read about here in this scripture in Numbers is the where did it start? It start with the mixed multitude. The mixed multitude. You know, when they came up out of Egypt, it wasn't just the descendants of Jacob and Joseph that come up out of there, the 12 tribes. They had some hangers on. Right? There was other people that were over in Goshen, other people that were undesirables in Egyptian culture. Maybe they had other slaves from other races and backgrounds or whatever. We don't know. But mixed multitude means just that. They were mixed. They weren't homogeneous. They weren't all Israelites. They weren't all the sons of Jacob. There was other people with them, probably that didn't like Egyptians, and maybe some outcasts from Egyptian society. There were all kinds of just people that weren't necessarily Israelites, but they were over there. And then when God come down and starts blessing them, especially when the plagues come, and there's an opportunity for them, and there's 2 million of them coming up out of there, there was an opportunity for some hangers-on to come, and there was a mixed multitude. There's some that didn't have any business with the children of Israel. They kind of rode their coattails up out of Egypt. And there they were, the mixed multitude. And that's right where the problem started. Every time you go back and you'll read that the murmuring started right there. Now, I'll tell you, that is one of the reasons that we as a church of Jesus Christ have to, and I believe we do, but we have to maintain a regenerate membership. That's why we stand so firmly on that. It's not because we're discriminating against other people, but the Bible clearly tells us what happens when a mixed multitude gets in. And I'll tell you, that's what's happened to a lot of churches out there. I mentioned maybe it was last week, or I can't remember, about something, maybe it's a Sunday school lesson, about, you know, in this area, it used to be, yeah, maybe 150 years ago now, 100, 120, 150 years ago, there was Methodist churches all over this land that you could go and you could hear the gospel preached. They preached heartfelt salvation, and they believed in heartfelt salvation. They'd even have revivals with Baptists together because they could agree on how to deal with sinners and the need to seek God until you got your heart right with God, and bless them for that. But see, they had an Achilles heel. Their views on baptism and their views on church membership was an Achilles heel. And pretty soon, they were not strict in maintaining a regenerate membership. Now, they were preaching it and teaching it just like Baptists were. But see, they weren't strict in maintaining a regenerate membership because of their views on what the church was and on baptism and these different things. And so over time, they got a mixed multitude in there. And that mixed multitude got bigger, and then they got to causing a ruckus. So, well, we don't like this. We don't like that. And I don't know why we can't play cards. And I don't know why we can't go to the movies. And I don't know, and whatever the other thing, I'm just making deal. They had problems with this and with that and with everything else. And the next thing you know, you got Methodist churches around here. Not the old country ones, but you got some of the big ones. They got, they've got homosexuals as leaders in the church. They've got women as pastors in the church. They definitely ain't teaching salvation, right? And it's happened to some Baptist churches out there just like that. But why? Because of the mixed multitude got in among them. And they're the first ones because they have no spiritual man. They've never been regenerate. All they know is the taste of the flesh. All they know is the lust of the flesh. The manna will never, that mixed multitude, that manna was never going to satisfy them. And you bring a lost soul into a church and you can clean them up and you can set them down in the pew and you can get them to follow the rules and pray a pretty prayer and sing the songs and all these other things, but the things of God, the true man of God, will never satisfy them. They will always be lusting after the flesh pots of Egypt, and if you're not careful, they'll stir you up and everybody else to it as well. And that's why we have to maintain a regenerate membership in our churches. But you know, that mixed multitude just isn't in our church pews. How much of a mixed multitude do you have in your social life, in your acquaintance life, in your friendship circle? I know, now you're getting personal, preacher. Well, now let's just think about it. That mixed multitude will never be satisfied with the manna from on high. And people that don't know the Lord won't ever be satisfied with Jesus Christ. They won't ever be satisfied with the sustenance that God gives to us, the spiritual sustenance. We talked this morning in Sunday school, and Brother Colin made mention of how we don't talk enough maybe about the joy of serving the Lord, how that it's a joyful thing to be in service, to be in a Bible study, a preaching service, a revival, whatever. When God comes on the scene, that's the greatest joy that we can ever experience. And if you're a child of God, I hope you remember some of those times that you were close to God and He came down, and there's nothing like it. You'll never be on a mountaintop. There's no pleasures of flesh that can ever come close to it. But listen, for people that have never been saved, they can't understand that. You can't ever convince them that going to a church singing on a Sunday afternoon is better than going out to the lake. Or they're going to a revival on a Wednesday night, it's better than going to the new release of the biggest big movie or whatever it is. You'll never convince them of that because they know not the things of God. They can't taste the manna. It's just bland in their mouth. They don't. They just taste it as nothing. They can't tell the sweetness that's in there the way that the children of God can. But just like that mixed multitude got in there and they're complaining, and pretty soon they got the whole company stirred up. God's people as well, if we allow a mixed multitude into our lives, whether it's our friends, the people we spend time with, whoever it is that's in our inner circle, if we have unregenerate people in there, what are they going to be doing? They're not going to be satisfied. Now, they might be the best moral people. That's not what I'm talking about. I don't think any of you got friends that are, you know, drunks or drug addicts or whoremongers or any of that stuff. But nonetheless, there's all kinds of other things out there that people want to do. They want to gossip. They want to do this. They want to do that. They want to watch some of that filth that passes for primetime TV and this and that and everything else except eating of the manna of God. And so beware of the mixed multitude. We try to maintain a regenerate membership. We don't let the mixed multitude come in and be members of our churches. And I warn all of God's people about a mixed multitude in your circle of friends, of people that are close to you. Now, I'm not talking about not having acquaintances, but who do you let influence your life? It better be other children of God, because if it's not, they're going to be leading you back to the flesh pots of Egypt, because they don't know anything about the manna of God. They only know the flesh pots of Egypt. And so, what is God trying to teach us here? Only the manna will sustain the Christian life. Only the manna that God gave them would take them through the wilderness. There was times that he sent them quails and it come out their nose because said they ate it until they were sick of it, because God was trying to prove a point to them. But it was the manna that they had from this time right here in the wilderness of sin all the way until they crossed Jordan. 40 years later, they got the manna every day. And it says over there, when they crossed Jordan, the manna stopped coming. That was the promised land. They'd made it home. God will give us the manna every day, and it's the only thing that'll sustain us. But we've all fed off the flesh pots of Egypt before. And that taste is in our mouth and it's in our brain. And if you go dwell on it, the devil will stir it back up. And if you go feed on it now and again, you'll never lose the taste for it. You know, the first time I heard it was my dad telling it from the pulpit. Later I read it, he got it from B.H. Carroll, because later I read it in B.H. Carroll somewhere, and I'm sure B.H. Carroll got it from somebody else. That's just the way Baptist preachers are, right? We take a little something and we pass it on down. So I don't know who first came up with this, but I'm sure it was true at the time. But about a Indian, Native American man that had gotten saved. And somebody asked him, "What's it like?" He said, "It's like I got two dogs in me fighting, a black dog and a white dog, and they're fighting all the time." And then this person asked him, said, "Well, which one wins?" And he said, "Whichever one I feed the most." And that's the way it is with the Christian walk. Are we feeding our life with the manna that God is providing through this word, through Jesus Christ? If you feed yourself with that, you'll build up strong bones and strong muscles and all the endurance that you need to make it through this trial. What God is trying to do, just like he did in that wilderness, he was trying to break them from Egypt. Yes, he had saved them. He brought them up out of Egypt, but they weren't broken of Egypt yet. They weren't broken of their love for the flesh pots, and we see that. And you and I aren't any either. We come up off that altar saved. Yes, you're saved. You're a child of God. You've got a changed nature, but you still have a desire after that sin. You still have the flesh pots of Egypt in your mind, and there is a process, a refining process that happens through the wilderness of the Christian life, where God is trying to teach us. He's trying to break our taste for those flesh pots so that we have a taste only for the manna of God. If we could get there where we didn't even care, couldn't even remember what those flesh pots in Egypt tasted like, and all we knew was the sweet manna from God, that's where he wants us to be. But which one are we feeding? Are we feeding on manna, or do we go out every now and again and slip down and taste the flesh pots of Egypt? Or even if we don't do that, do we lay awake at night now and again and remember what they tasted like? God doesn't want us doing that. He wants us feeding on the manna. Now, I said this was an example, a case in point. Just like those Israelites struggled with this, you and I are going to struggle with it. And you'll see that sometimes God got a little bit salty with them. And he'll get a little bit salty with us too sometimes, won't he? Maybe you've experienced that in your life too. Because God don't like it when we murmur against his blessings. But understand, it is a condition of this life. But look what happens. Look what happens and how to avoid it. How to avoid it. Look to the manna. eat the manna, stay separate from the mixed multitude that doesn't know anything but the flesh pots, and they're going to carry you right back to it. So as we close, I would ask you today, what are you eating? When you get outside of these doors, what are you eating? Do you go to the flesh pots, or are you going to the manna? I encourage us all to feed on the manna. Feed on the manna and stay away from the flesh pots of Egypt, because they're just going to drag us back there. Stay away from people that don't know anything about manna, that only want to drag you back to the flesh pots of Egypt. Feed on the manna, because that's what will sustain this Christian life. That's what will take you through to the end, whenever that end is. That's what got Paul through, why he got to where he said, I have run a good race, I have fought a good fight, now there's laid before me, now treasure's laid up before me. Because he'd been feeding on manna. He'd been feeding on manna. That's what God has for us. And it's right here. It's in your prayer closet. It is the blood of the very Jesus Christ that we have access to each and every day that will sustain this Christian life in the ups and in the downs. And have no doubt, there's a wilderness before us. There was a wilderness before them. You won't see Canaan until you cross Jordan, just like them. Everything in between, everything from coming out of bondage to getting across Jordan is the wilderness. And we're going to suffer through it just like they did. But God provides every day manna. If we'll just eat it. If we'll just eat it and get a taste for it. And then we won't want anything else. That's my sermon this morning. I appreciate you listening to me. Brother Colin, if we can get a song. If you have a need this morning, seek the Lord. This altar won't do anything for you, but it's a good place to come. But Jesus, if you need to get back, if you need to get back to the manna, go to Jesus. If you're lost this morning and you don't know anything about it, and you're still in bondage in Egypt, God will set you free. Come to Him. Come to Him this morning. Go on. That's all sin.